Hogan, we have a very special guest here. I don't know if you recognize the face. If
I can't recognize her.
Yeah, listeners can't see who's sitting here with us, but by God, it's Sunny Joy Nelson.
I'm back.
Hi, Sunny.
Hey, I'm glad to be back after a five-week hiatus, having a baby and all that.
So how's it been? Young Isaiah has entered the world. What's happening?
It's great. I don't want to jinx myself, but he is a wonderful baby. He rarely ever cries. He's sleeping 4 or 5 hours at night. He's doing a great job, but you'll probably hear him crying in the background in like 5 minutes.
Anytime now.
I guess it's impressive, but you know, Tim and I can get pregnant now too.
That's true.
Right. Have you not read, say The Guardian or the Los Angeles Times, one of those papers? We can.
So if you think about it, there's really nothing special about being a woman. If we all can do this now.
I know. Finally, somebody.
Somebody said it.
It wasn't going to be me.
I got you.
Yeah. And with that, well, congratulations, Mommy.
What does he call you, Mommy? He's going to call me, I guess, Mama, Mommy, whatever he,
Mama,
whatever he
that's
says.
Right. You're from North Carolina, so Mama.
That's right.
That's
probably right. Yeah. All right. Well, it's wonderful to have you back. It's good to see you. And Hogan, it's good to see you too.
Good to see you too.
Yeah, thanks. Because this
Line Drive Podcast. There was a stinger joke in there somewhere, but I let it go.
Somewhere. Was there?
I don't know.
That was the stinger, by the way. Big couple of days this week. We might as well get right into it. Are you okay, Sunny? Do you need to warm up or anything?
I hope y'all show me some grace in this first time back. You go from pregnancy brain to mom brain, and I guess it just never goes away. You never get your thought process back on track. So I'll do my best.
This is my theory. My theory is that it was always your brain.
It could be that. At least it's coming out.
At least she has an excuse. What's our excuse? Our brain's on track, Tim.
We might be pregnant right now.
There you go.
You don't know that. You know. Yes, limit your comments to what you actually know about,
This is true.
Anyhow, so earlier this week was the second sort of Republican primary debate. I know you guys paid very close attention. Hogan, you had to do a TV hit right after it was over, so you knew what was going on. Let's the young lady who is back from I guess we call it podcast maternity leave. What do you think about the, was it a spectacle last night or the other night at the Reagan Ranch, the Reagan Library?
Well, I will say it's great because I can kind of use this as an excuse now for everything. Oh, I have a baby, but I was trying to put my baby to sleep as this was going on. So I was watching it on my computer while trying to put him to sleep and I had it on really low. But overall, what I took away from it, the pieces I got here and there, I was not excited or motivated. Nothing stuck out to me. I saw a bunch of reports saying that they thought Scott won. To me, Vivek was still the winner because of all of the people, I enjoy listening to him the most. Just overall, I was like, man, y'all are not exciting. DeSantis, I was like falling asleep listening to him. Pence was complete 180 from the last debate. Besides the weird comments, like what the sleeping with a teacher, did y'all catch that?
Yeah.
He was trying to
make a joke,
have a clever way of saying that he's married to a teacher. Right.
I agree. That was just kind of like, ugh. He's not the one to make that. I feel like normally he's not going to make a joke like that.
No.
Not my favorite, but overall, my biggest takeaway was Nikki Haley. I was not a fan at all of her, of
really?
Everything.
Okay, so I'm interested to hear. Hogan is laughing soundlessly there. He's got his microphone on mute, I think. But I'm interested to hear a woman's perspective as to why did Nikki Haley turn you off so much?
As a woman, I can say this, but her response to Vivek and saying, every time you talk, I feel like I'm getting stupider, or whatever she said with the eye roll and all the emotion.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me play that for you.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah, I have that right here. Hold on.
There's one person on this.
This is infuriating because TikTok is one of the most dangerous social media apps that we could have. And what you've got, I honestly, every time I hear you, I feel a little bit dumber for what you say. Because I can't believe that here you've got a TikTok situation. What they're doing is these 150 million people are on TikTok. That means they can get your contacts, they can get your financial information, they can get your emails, they can get text messages, they can get all of these things.
This is very important for our party.
Exactly what they're
doing. This is very important for our party, and I'm going to say,
you've gone and you've helped China build, make medicines in China, not America.
Excuse me.
You're now wanting kids to go and get on the social media that's dangerous for all of us. You went and you were in business with the Chinese that gave Hunter Biden $5 million. We can't trust you. We can't trust you. We can't have TikTok in our kids' lives. We need to ban them.
Mr. Ramaswamy, you have 15 seconds.
I think, excuse me.
You have 15 seconds, Mr. Ramaswamy.
Thank you. I think we would be better served as a Republican Party if we're not sitting here hurling personal insults and actually have a legitimate debate about policy.
Okay, well, that's kind of rich because he was spreading insults around in the first debate. But so anyway, that's the exchange you were talking about. So
from everybody on the stage being bought and paid for last debate. Hey, we shouldn't hurl insults at each other.
Right. Can't we all just get along and talk about the issues? Right. So go ahead, Sonny. What did you not like about Nikki Haley in that exchange?
Well, my very first thought when she said that was she is just feeding right into what women are accused of doing and why women shouldn't have high political power. She made it emotional. She got so like dramatic about it with the eye roll and just went straight emotional. I didn't like it at all. I thought it was just a bad look. I thought it was rude. And I just don't think it's a winning message. And then just the bickering back and forth. I was like, am I watching like high schoolers go at each other right now? I couldn't make out a single word anyone was saying for the majority of the debate. You know, that might be a hot take, but I didn't like it.
No, that's interesting. That's interesting. But I mean, look, you've seen two men go at each other in a debate like that, yelling back and forth and yelling on top of each other before. Why is it different if Nikki Haley does it?
Well, the yelling, yes. I meant all of them yelling at each other. I feel like they were doing it all night and I just couldn't make it out. But I don't know, as a woman, being the only woman up there, you got to go into a debate like this and set yourself apart and say, you know what? I'm not going to be emotional. I'm not going to be what people claim women are all the time. I'm going to hang in there with the big dogs. But she didn't do that, in my opinion.
Hogan, you're a South Carolina guy. What do you think?
And I know Nikki. She was my governor and Tim Scott was my senator. I find that interesting because you're the third conservative woman I've spoken to today, Sonny Joy, who said they hated her performance.
Mm-hmm.
And someone I spoke to this morning on the phone really early said to me, am I wrong? Like, I was on Twitter and I was looking around. All these women were like, oh, she's killing it. You slay queen. And I was thinking to myself, she's horrible.
Yeah.
She goes, am I out of touch with conservative women nowadays? Mm-hmm. It was just kind of an interesting conversation to have with people who are, you know, titans in the conservative movement going, I just didn't like it. It didn't land for me. Look, the interesting part about the exchange to me is kind of layered, and I don't think it's going to make it. It's good for podcast fodder. So let me just say it.
That's good.
It's not good for like debating. It's just not. As soon as she said those things, then there's a Twitter feed going around with the blurb that she wrote for Vivek's book saying his honest speech and the way that he's so great. So that was just political posturing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, she embraces pretty much all of Joe Biden's foreign policy. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get to that last night, but that's an Achilles heel for her because it's not where the party is. She's a neocon. Okay. And then lastly, there was an overinflation of her importance in the administration as the ambassador to the UN.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whatever. You go there, they say bad things about America, you say bad things about America.
I mean, Republicans, generally speaking, don't have high regard for the UN at all, anyway, no matter who our ambassador
is. But it was a cabinet-level post. She kind of demanded it be so. Fine. She treated it as though she was kind of a Secretary of State 2.0, really inflating the position. And she talks about all the time the most difficult, complex, world-shifting issues she had to deal with in the UN, and you have to be involved. And I was so involved. Then why'd you quit?
Yeah.
You quit before you were done. You left. So which is it? Is it not that really important? Or is it so important I walked out on it? It's a weird, like, you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. This isn't something you talk about in debate. It's also, you know, she's in a difficult, I think for this, I think getting into a back and forth with Vivek there is probably the best thing that she could do, because if the debate centers on, because her area of expertise, you would think would be foreign relations or foreign policy based on her UN experience, as you just laid out. But the most pressing foreign policy matter that is before America right now, and therefore is central to the Republican primary, is the level of our involvement in Ukraine. And she is not where the party faithful are on that. She's way off, you know. So, I mean, she's in agreement with the Biden policy on that, and that's just not where the Republican voters are. But, so she's in a bad spot when it comes to that. But I don't think she's that great. This was probably her opportunity, because she was kind of the buzzy candidate coming out of the debate, and so this was another chance to gather some momentum. And I think in polling that I've seen, she does get some fairly high marks. I didn't see any that said that she won the debate. I saw one that said that DeSantis won the debate. Then I said that she was in second, fairly distant second, but second. Mm-hmm. But the eye rolling, I mean, just her hatred or disdain, I guess.
Seriously. Can I add in? This is kind of off topic, but as they started going off about TikTok back and forth, whatever, the next commercial break, at least on mine, because I was watching on my computer, as soon as they went to commercial, the first commercial was a TikTok commercial.
Was it really?
No, I didn't. Yes. And I was like, wow, what are the odds of that happening? Right. That's off topic.
So I think, you know, I think it's important. The TikTok issue is important because, yes, it definitely is allowing the Chinese to mine data, whatever they can glean off your phones. But I think what people don't mention about the threat that TikTok presents, it's not mentioned often enough anyway. Some people do talk about it. But the fact that this is a Chinese app and there are, you know, I don't know, 150 million Americans who use it or whatever the number is, including a ton of young people. And it's the video content that the Chinese can control and serve up to our young people and control and influence the way they see the world, the way they see the United States. They can turn our own people. It's a tremendous propaganda weapon that the Chinese have placed in the hands of tens of millions of Americans. Yeah. I mean, in the Cold War, what would the Soviets have given to be able to put something in the hands of every American and get them to change the way they think based on this thing that they've planted?
And that's exactly what TikTok is in China is not what it is here. They don't have all the crazy stuff over there. It's like about education and math and respecting your elders. It's that kind of stuff. It's not. Sure. It's more culturally appropriate things for their kids as opposed to the trash and filth they put on it for ours.
Yeah, I mean the reins that they have, the controls that they have on the internet in places like China. I mean, the people can't see what's out there. I mean, we think we have a censorship problem on social media here. Whew, try living 5 minutes in China.
I have Go ahead, Sonny. Mixed feelings, because Tim, I texted you about this the other day about TikTok, because I have TikTok. So I'm like, I don't know how I feel about it. I don't post some videos. I know.
Yeah.
Next. I'm compromised. Next. But
comrade. Thank you, comrade.
Yeah. But you know, I mean,
poor child.
Can they get stuff off my phone? Yeah, but can Instagram get the same things off my phone? I don't know. I'm a little illiterate.
Can a spy balloon that goes from sea to shining sea for days at a time get stuff? Sure.
Yeah. Look, that's why I'm less concerned with the data aspect of it and more concerned with the propaganda tool that it is for the Chinese.
Yeah.
Let's go back.
But we're off the subject of the debate.
Yeah, let's go back to the debate. So I thought the questions were odd.
Yeah.
It came from a place of leftist policy, which was weird. Mm-hmm. They were skewed against us in the way they were framed and everything else, which isn't atypical, but you'd think if the RNC and Fox Business are working together. Also, it was Fox Business. Bidenomics come up at all? I don't remember it being a big topic or the economy being a huge topic, except a couple answers here and there. That was a little bit odd to me. The lighting was weird. And look, I've been in the debate at that facility when I was with Mike Huckabee. It is a beautiful venue. The lighting was weird.
Yeah.
Answers were weird. The fighting was weird. There was no, it was like Thunderdome. There were no rules in that place. And I kept waiting, like, but people are kind of, you know, mad at the moderators. What did you want them to do? Go up there and like slap somebody and say, hey, Pence, you.
Well, they had lost. They had lost control.
It's going to devolve into this madness. And they didn't have a bell, so you didn't know when people were supposed to be done, which is problematic for us at home as viewers. But those are things you negotiate as campaigns. You don't want bells. You don't want hand-raised questions, all the things we fight about on campaigns. But I just thought there was no, at the outset, all right, guys, Fox Business, here's what we're going to do. These questions, you get this amount of time, you get this. And it was, but it wasn't. And this is going to be firm. And the first time someone didn't follow it, then it was done. Then
shock collar.
Two faces out of two, it was over. And so just from a debate standpoint, I didn't get much from it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I think the moderators, like, I know Dana Perino, and I think she did as best a job as you could. Look, when Doug Burgum is on the end of the stage causing problems for you and disobeying the rules.
Yeah, but that question she asked.
Things have really gotten out of hand.
No good.
The one about voting somebody off the island.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a strange one. didn't go over well. But the moderator, when I would have thought that in the scope of a Republican primary debate, that the party and the debate organizers and the hosting network and all that would have learned its lesson from a time when, let's say, you had a guy like John Harwood being selected as to be a moderator in a Republican primary debate, firing questions at Republican candidates from the left. This is supposed to be Republicans choosing a Republican, right? We don't need leftist journalists to come in there and try to, you know, create opposition research nuggets for the Democrats in the general election, because that's what's going on. And so the questions, like you were saying, the questions that are coming from the left, I mean, you know, in defense of Ron DeSantis, the question about the curriculum in Florida regarding slavery. I mean, it might as well have been Kamala Harris asking that question.
I'm going to disagree.
Why?
I'm going to disagree. Here's why. He is at his best when he's defending his policy and punching.
All right, fair enough.
But here's
fair enough. But the premise of the question is false.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. The premise of the question where she said, hey, this is what people said about the curriculum. Turns out it's not true. And then she goes, but people are still upset. What do you say to them? I'd be like, upset about what? You just said what they thought it was. It wasn't. So that whole thing's a lie. So why are they still upset? There's no reason for them to be upset. But that's a bad example because that exchange was bad. And I thought that questioner didn't do a good job at all. But I would have liked some pointed questions where you would have said, all right, and Sonny Joy, I'm going to get your opinion on this. Because like, as Governor Nikki, you did this, this, and this. Now you're saying you would have this. Explain to me what changed. It's it's not an attack. It's you tell us. It gives them the platform to defend something.
Yeah.
I didn't like a lot of the, it was almost like a, you know, hey, you're in South Carolina. Tell us why it's such a great state. I needed some more friction, if that made any sense. It was just, you know what I mean?
Are you saying that the questions were too easy or that they were too hard?
Well, neither. They were too easy. And then they were couched in narratives that came from the left. It's like when we talk about abortion, for example, and we didn't do it in this debate, we did in the first one. The moderators will make us debate weeks. The left will have a debate and they'll go, tell us how far back overturning Roe v. Wade set women's rights. They don't say, all right, Republicans are at 15, 16 weeks. What's your limit, Democrat? They don't make them get specific. They let them use broad platitudes.
Well, and in fact, what they do is they defend them when it's pretty obvious based on votes that they've all taken that they actually support no limits on abortion, but the media protects them from
example.
That.
I'm just
giving
the example.
So bottom line, did anything happen last night that changes the race even a little bit, the overall race? Because we haven't mentioned, of course, Donald Trump was not present again for the second time, and there's, in my view, no reason for him to be there.
Yeah.
Did anything change?
Not in my opinion. I mean, I thought last night was quite boring compared to the first one. I didn't even clearly feel the need to watch the whole thing.
Well, when there was all that crosstalk and back and forth and the yelling, yeah, and the Nikki Haley, yeah, and Vivek was like the worst of it, but there was a lot of it going on, yes, all night. And a couple times I just thought, this is pointless.
Yeah.
This is pointless. What is being accomplished here? It's like a fight to the death. They know that only one of them is going to get out of the room alive. And it was just a knife fight, and it was unpleasant.
Imagine being just a moderate voter, considering voting in the Republican primary. You know, who stood out to them? What candidate did a good job of saying, I'm trying to earn your vote? In my opinion, no one.
You know, good NFL teams go in at halftime and make adjustments. It's pretty obvious all of these candidates made adjustments after the first debate. Mm. Vivek was calmer.
They did. Yeah, you're right.
Even mm-hmm. Pence was a little calmer.
He
Nikki was.
Nikki
was more aggressive. DeSantis talked about his personal stuff more. Burgum tried to interject more. Christie had a one-liner that was horrible and cringe.
Yeah. Christie did,
as did many of them.
So bad.
But they all kind of went back and had some consultant help, and then also kind of read the tea leaves on what voters were saying, and they mm-hmm. changed the plays for the second
DeSantis,
half.
DeSantis was more pointed, and I think he only did it once, where he said he attacked Trump for not being sure. there to defend himself and all that stuff. And that's the first time that he's really, because for the longest time, he and everybody else, except for Christie and Asa Hutchinson, remember him? Those are the only two guys, Christie and Asa Hutchinson, who were directly attacking Trump all the time. And everybody else was kind of walking around on eggshells because, you know, the guy's 55% of the vote and all the stuff. You can't attack him really, because then you alienate his supporters and you need them if you're going to try to wrest the nomination away from Trump. But so that was a little bit of a pivot in strategy, I thought, when DeSantis, I think, quite eagerly and aggressively took a swipe at Trump. And it was kind of unprovoked. It was like, he brought it up. You know what I mean? Yeah. He initiated that particular attack, which I think is a change in strategy on his part.
Did he also say something about Trump's comments about the 6-week abortion ban when Trump called it a terrible thing? Did he say something about that?
He did.
Okay. I didn't hear that part, but I saw it on Twitter and I couldn't remember if he said something about it. I mean, honestly, good for him for saying something about it. You know, pro-life issue is my number one issue. So if I was at DeSantis camp, I'd be bringing that up too.
So all that back and forth, Sonny, tell me in the questions and statements that Trump has given regarding abortion, what does all of that say to you?
Oh, Tim.
You don't have to answer if you don't.
It's okay.
Go ahead and answer.
I'm trying to decide for myself exactly how I feel about it. President Trump has done the most pro-life things than any other president have. His actions have far outweighed his words when it comes to the pro-life issue. And so, you know, I'm very thankful for that. He's right. If it wasn't for him, Roe v. Wade would not be overturned.
True.
His statements that he's put out after, and I know like Team Trump has been tweeting about his pro-life comments that he's had, have been great and a good start at trying to make up for what he said about the 6-week ban. In my opinion, it's not quite enough. I think he needs to have a little bit more of a bolder stance on being pro-life, because the pro-life voting bloc is a pretty big bloc. I mean, it's going to be most of the Christian conservatives. He needs their vote still. So he needs to take a strong stance on this. And I know some people are upset about what he said about transgender. A few weeks ago, he said something about, you know, a man or whatever. I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but when it comes to these cultural issues, I think he needs to be a little bit more strong in taking a stance instead of just trying to ride the fence.
Yeah. You know, the pro-life community, the people who come up into politics through the pro-life community, and that's why they're involved in Republican politics. You know, there's a certain language that everybody uses in a certain way to speak about issues. And if you're, I mean, it's obvious Trump did not come up into politics from any other route except for when he jumped right in 2015, right? So he did not come up through the pro-life community. So he does not speak in those same languages and in those things. And I think you know, I'm sure the pro-life community had concerns with him in 2015 and 2016. And then he goes and nominates the Supreme Court justices that, as you point out, overturned Roe v. Wade. So, you know, this is kind of a tug of war that the pro-life community has been through before with Trump. So
I will say, just knowing him, and I've not talked to him about this, just knowing him, when I heard that, and again, I'm not trying to correct him. I don't work for him. I think what he was trying to point out was he thinks it's a bad political tactic. He's been a pro-life president.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't think
it's a political tactic.
Because
I believe that's probably right.
Now, look, there's a lot of reasons for that in large measure. And I don't want to go on a whole tangent here. We can talk about this next month and the month after if you want. But when Roe v. Wade was overturned, Republicans were the dog that caught the car. They just didn't know what to do with it. And then for months, we didn't say a word, and the left painted us in all of these horrible lights. I think we can message it in a way, and I've been talking to Kellyanne about this, Kellyanne Conway and others, in a very positive manner, because it's about protecting the woman and having fewer abortions. That's just the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And the left will never sign on to a 15-week ban. Never. Because every United States senator who's a Democrat, but one, voted for a bill that would allow for abortions anytime, anywhere, any place, for any reason up until the moment of birth, and they wanted you to pay for it.
Yeah.
86% of the people in this country disagree with that. They do not like that position. We need to make them own the position and defend ours without looking for a home run, to use the
Well, that's the bill that's
here. Right?
That's the vote I was talking about.
You can't round the bases here. The country's not there, okay? Mm-hmm. We can all agree when a baby feels pain and when you can operate on a baby in utero, they need anesthesia at like 15, 16 weeks. A vast majority of the people in this country support that. If a state wants to do more, they can do that, because for the first time in 50 years, the Supreme Court gave the people the right to decide, not a court. So that's good. But I think what he was trying to say was, it's not a good tactic going into a general, because 90% of the country is not to that position. If states want to pass it, they can. But for the most part, at the federal level, and I'll tell you just real quick as I end my little spiel on this, if you saw Kamala Harris, you didn't see Kamala Harris with Margaret Brennan on CBS, when she asked her to what she was trying to help her, what week limit is good for you? And Kamala's like, look, we don't want anything to be different. We just want to return to Roe v. Wade. Those rights were taken away. And she's like, yeah, no, I get it. But just tell me what week is, should we cut it off? She couldn't answer it, because the answer is up until the moment of birth.
Yeah.
And they don't want to say it, but that's their position. We have to make them own it. And the American people, at least it'll be a draw as an issue in an election. But if we don't bring it in those terms, we're going to be in big trouble.
That's true. And you have most of the media, I mean, to credit to Brennan for asking that question, but most of the media tries to, like, if you say, oh, well, they support abortion up to the moment of birth, most reporters will say, no, they don't.
Look at
this bill that they all voted for. And they say, that can't be. That's not. So they defend them on this.
Yeah.
And then they all, because they know how disastrous a position that actually is.
Yes.
Hogan, I was going to say, you did a really good job explaining that. And how you think that's what he meant by using those words. I wish the campaign would have put out something like that. I mean, I know that gets a little tricky and like you're kind of trying to walk it back, but having like surrogates go out and explain it that way, I think could go a long way in some of the pro-lifers' opinions.
So I think that's probably enough about the debate.
Can I make my Chris Christie joke?
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Please.
So the clip of him saying to Donald Trump, you've been ducking these debates. So if you don't, you know, come here, you can't be called Donald Trump. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
Yeah.
I've been saying all day, well, look, in fairness to him, his blood sugar was probably low and he just wanted, he had a roast duck on the mind. Something to eat came to mind. And so he thought Donald Duck, something.
Okay.
That's all I got. That was funnier than any joke they did last
year. I guess. I know. Who doesn't love a good diabetes joke?
But by the way, if that debate was point number one and reason number one to end the writer's strike in Hollywood. I don't know what
is. Oh, yes.
They needed some help up there, man.
Yeah. Hey, do I have this right? Have the late night talk shows been off the air the entire time the strike has been going on? Is that true?
I have no idea.
Or at least part of it.
I had no idea. No idea.
Hey, before we move on to the next topic, Tim, who do you think won last night?
It sounds so dorky and cliche to say, but I mean, I don't think anybody on that stage won. And that means Donald Trump won. I mean, the purpose, look, everyone's goal, everyone who was involved in that debate last night, their goal is to, it's got to be a two-step process for them. They have to separate themselves from that pack, the people who are on that stage. And then step two is they have to begin to make up ground singularly away from the pack, make up ground on Donald Trump. I don't see how anybody on that stage separated him or herself from the rest of the people who are on that stage. And I don't think anybody, clearly nobody made up any ground on Donald Trump. I mean, I think that the whole thing had no impact at all. That there's a whole lot of effort that all the campaigns made on that. And who knows how many dozens or hundreds of rapid response, you know, press releases ended up in people's inboxes last night from the seven campaigns that were involved. But what a colossal waste of time. That's the way I view it.
So true. Hogan?
Yeah. Hogan. Oh, who won?
Yeah.
I, again, I don't want to be cliche, but Donald Trump clearly went to Michigan, talked to union, non-union workers alike to tell them, hey, the reason they're picketing over there is because of Joe Biden's policies on electric vehicles, trying to put you out of business. He came here for 15 minutes and he flies out to California, which I'm sure they talked about green policies out there too. Whole thing's a joke. He did the best job. And if you say, no, it's got to be someone in the room. Okay, fine. The America First policies won then, because everyone up there is clamoring to try and implement those policies and take the mantle from Donald Trump that says, hey, we're going to pay attention to the American people's needs first. Every candidate up there has some version of that in their pitch, albeit some are still stuck in the 90s and early 2000s on foreign policy and other things. But for the most part, people are really grabbing a hold of the America First policy. So I think it was a combination of Trump and those policies.
That's a good enough answer, Sonny.
It is.
How about you? Who do you think won?
Nikki.
No?
Well, I'll have
you know who we haven't talked about? Tim Scott. Nobody meant Tim Scott was the great disappearing canon. But anyway, so Sonny, who won?
I mean, I don't really have like a good political reasoning for this. I'm just going to say Vivek because I like him the most out of all of them up there. I like listening to him. I think he's exciting and I genuinely enjoy hearing what he has to say. I think he's a good public speaker. So I like hearing him.
Can I, one more point real quick about Pence, a former vice president. I worked with Mike. He's a great guy. Enjoyed working with him. His way of speaking, I know he's a sincere man. I think he thinks everyone who hears him thinks people think he's sincere. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It does not come across that way. And when you have 30 seconds to give an answer and you say, the American people are in trouble. We've had a lot of problems from Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And you pause like 10 seconds between sentences. It's a problem. And when you compare and contrast that with Nikki Haley, by the way, I think we found where that White House cocaine ended up.
Whoa.
He went on going so fast. Like, can't we find
hot take.
In the middle where it's just kind of like a
normal speaking person.
Rational, forceful, but not over dramatically slow and not so fast. Like, I was just a little frustrated by that.
I hear you. He's a little bit too deliberate and theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I've seen Ted Cruz used to be almost.
Yeah.
Back when he was Lion Ted. Now he's Beautiful Ted, so it's okay.
All right, let's move on. So also this week was the first impeachment inquiry hearing in front of the, I think it was the House Oversight Committee.
Oh, I've got to change.
What?
You got to take me off screen for a minute. I got a surprise for this.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
All right. Oh, boy.
I'll be right back. You do the setup.
Okay. All right. So anyway.
I'm worried.
I don't know what he's doing. This is listener. If you're listening on one of the audio versions, you're not going to be able to see this anyway. But if you're watching on Rumble, when Hogan comes back, he's going to be dressed as Cookie Monster or something. I don't know. So they had the first House Oversight Committee. First is one of the committees that has jurisdiction over this impeachment inquiry. They got underway. Here is a little bit of the opening statement from Congressman Comer, who's
chairing. For the purpose of making an opening statement. Since assuming our Republican majority in January, the House Oversight and Accountability Committee has uncovered a mountain of evidence revealing how Joe Biden abused his public office for his family's financial gain. For years, President Biden has lied to the American people about his knowledge of and participation in his family's corrupt business schemes. At least 10 times, Joe Biden lied to the American people that he never spoke to his family about their business dealings. He lied by telling the American people that there was an absolute wall between his official government duties and his personal life. Let's be clear. There was no wall. The door.
Okay, that's basically it. And that's the opening statement. And there, Hogan was there a minute ago, and now he's gone again. So I think that sentence that Congressman Comer, hey, Hogan, that
I didn't change.
You look exactly the same as you did.
I got my new t-shirt.
Oh!
Hogan, for the folks who are listening, Hogan is holding up a t-shirt that says 10% for the big guy.
I love it.
That's pretty cool.
Have you worn it yet?
No. I was going to wear it now, but I thought, I'll just keep this on.
That's you should wear that. Wear that out in D.C. Let me know. The response. Sure,
In D.C. is a city in America where almost everybody will know what that means.
Sure.
Elsewhere, you might not get that. So Comer's opening statement lays it out there. And I think one of the keys for all the Democrats and those in the media who say that, there's no proof. They haven't offered any proof. For example, NBC has a headline here that was issued post-hearing today. And the headline is, House GOP's impeachment witnesses say there's no evidence yet that Biden committed a crime. And while it may be true that the exact dots, but this is an inquiry after all, not a trial. While it may be true that the exact dots have not been connected, whereas in they don't, we've covered this before, they can't point to a date in August of 2017 where, Joe Biden received in his checking account at Wells Fargo $1 million with a memo attached to it that said, from the Communist Party of China. There's no evidence like that yet, but the mountain of circumstantial evidence is unbelievable. And what Congressman Comer said there was that he abused his public office for his family's financial gain. That is undeniably true. The evidence exists right now to prove that entirely. They use Joe Biden's name and his public career as an elected official for the enrichment of the entire Biden family. That is a fact, and it is undeniable, is inarguable. And so, I don't know if it's begun to sink in yet or if the argument is being made clearly enough and succinctly enough, but that's basically it. They don't have to prove anything else. Getting proof of financial benefit to Joe Biden directly would, to me, be icing on the cake, because you cannot demonstrate to me that it is not a benefit to the patriarch of a family when his entire family is getting rich. If everyone around Joe Biden is getting rich, including his grandchildren, that is of benefit to him, whether or not somebody stroked him a check directly or not. Mm-hmm. That's my take on it. And as we get going here, I really am hopeful that the Republicans in Congress are able to broadcast this message and let it penetrate, because I do think it's easy to understand and I think it's egregious.
Yeah, Tim, that was my exact thought. I was watching some of the hearing today, probably for about an hour, and the Republicans have great evidence. They have really great talking points. They have, all of these things that I hope that they are able to broadcast out to voters, that they can see this. They are able, the Republicans for once can be really good at messaging and get it out there. But one thing that stuck out to me as I was watching was, it doesn't matter if they had a bank statement where it went right into Joe Biden's bank account. Democrats are going to defend it. They just, until they were blue in the face, were going on and on and on about how honestly this just doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, it's just about a father's love for his son. Like, what? How are we here? How are we in this position?
Which is, as Hogan loves to point out, this guy is such an awesome father. He also claims to have no idea what his son was up to.
Right.
Even while the guy was living in his house, he was living in his house and he still didn't know what he was doing.
He's simultaneously the most caring, loving, involved father in the history of fathers. And he had no idea what was going on in Hunter Biden's personal or professional life. So the whole thing's ridiculous. Look, we could go a million different directions with this. Sonny, though, they didn't really defend against any of the accusations. What they said was no evidence. Mm-hmm. And then they just said Trump a bunch of times.
Yep.
Jared Kushner a bunch of times.
Right.
They don't really have the ability to defend this, because even when someone said there was no money or whatever, I haven't seen any direct evidence. Comer would just kind of chime in and goes, are you not able to read a bank statement? Like, kind of got to the congresswoman who was making that point. I think she's from Texas. But
was it Jasmine Crockett? Was that her?
Maybe.
Did anyone see her?
Here, I think this will speak to your point, Hogan. This is from the hearing today. This is Congressman Jim Jordan talking to one of the witnesses, Jonathan Turley, the George Washington University law professor.
Called his dad. That's what we're investigating. That's one of the three things Professor Turley talked about, the influence peddling scheme. I want to go to those three things, Professor Turley. False statements, influence peddling scheme, and Joe Biden might have benefited. Let's do the third one first. Is a benefit to your family? Can a benefit to your family be a benefit to you?
It is. There's been repeated statements that you need to show that President Biden accepted direct money in order for this to constitute a benefit, even under criminal cases that deal with bribery, extortion, and the Hobbs Act. The courts actually have rejected that. They've said that money going to family members is, in fact, a benefit. And I don't really see any legal basis for that. Obviously, the strongest case is if you have a direct payment. But this idea that you can have millions going to a politician's family and that's not a benefit, I think is pretty fallacious.
Okay, let me say something about that.
Mm.
Turley undercut his own argument here, in my opinion.
Because I think he misspoke. He's misspoke in the middle where he said there's no legal basis for that. I think he was talking about...
No. But no, what I'm saying is he made the point. Courts have been clear. If the patriarch doesn't get any money, but everybody around him does, it still counts as him benefiting. Okay?
Right.
Like you said. We know he has received $25 million over 5 years, the Biden family received, at least that we know of. So because we know the money went to the Biden family, how can you then say there's no evidence to move forward with impeachment? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do understand what you're saying. But Turley, because Turley says,
whether he got it or not, the family benefited because they're the Biden family.
Right.
Then he says, but I don't see enough evidence yet to move. Maybe that doesn't count for you, but I'm saying, remember, because I've been through two impeachments now.
As have we all.
These are not.
I was on the outside.
Yeah, that's right.
At the campaign, and you were inside the bunker.
The standard isn't the breaking the laws according to legal statute. You can impeach a president for anything.
Sure. It's a political operation.
It's a political exercise. Right. Now, is it better if you're going to go through that and bring the country through it, that you actually have some evidence? Sure. Democrats didn't in two impeachments on Trump.
Yeah.
There is a ton of it here. And as you told me, Tim, for the left to say it's circumstantial, all evidence is circumstantial. If I'm standing there with a gun in my hand with blood fingerprints all over it, I got blood all over my shirt, and there's a dead person in the next room with gunshot wounds, you didn't see me kill him. But that's just circumstantial. I guess it doesn't matter. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, very, very infrequently do the police actually witness someone committing the murder, right? You always have to piece it together with what the evidence is. But yes. I see what you're saying about Turley's argument, because on the one hand, he is saying that the courts have held, and he seemed to be arguing in that clip, that it doesn't matter if the principal, Joe Biden in this case, received any direct payment. The fact that his family received the payment is enough, and that is of benefit to him, right? Then later, not in this clip that we just heard, but later he did then say that he does not believe the evidence exists to move for impeachment just yet.
Right.
But he just argued that you don't need that extra evidence because the fact that his family got rich is evidence enough.
Hmm. Yeah.
So he's so you're right. He's contradicting himself. That's right. Interesting. I hadn't considered it that way. But what it is so frustrating, and then it's clearly it's obvious to me that, and to anyone watching, that the Democrats' consistent strategy is going to be just to insist ad nauseum that there's no evidence. Say it in the face of the mountain of facts that the Republicans are going to be piling up over the course of the next however many weeks. They're just going to continuously say there's no evidence, despite the mountain of evidence right in front of them. And it's going to here's one. This is a congresswoman. I've never heard of this woman before today. Congresswoman Summer Lee from Pennsylvania.
I think that is, if my Republican colleagues had a so-called smoking gun, they would have presented it by now and would have talked about it non-stop.
Can the gentlelady read a bank statement, an email, a text message?
Are you asking her to yield, Mr. Chairman?
Reclaiming my time. Thank you. Reclaiming my time. Instead, we're sitting here with no fact witnesses and no evidence in this sham so-called impeachment to distract from their inability to fulfill their basic duty.
So there you have it. This is in the middle of the very first of these hearings, and there's going to be a lot of these hearings. This is in the middle of the very first hearing, and she's upset that the Republicans haven't rested their case with every lick of evidence already lined up. I mean, it's pretty amazing, but they're going to stick to that.
Calling it impeachment on purpose. It's not impeachment. It's an impeachment inquiry to find out. So the whole point of this is to get the evidence, right? That's something I think we're going to be frustrated by, you know, from now until this whole thing gets solved. But if the Republicans do it the right way, it's going to take some time. But look, they found more evidence and pieced more things together, did Comer and his committee in 5 months than the DOJ did in 5 years.
Yeah.
So they're moving fairly quickly as far as government goes.
I think a lot of Republican voters and people are going to start, you know, our folks are kind of impatient sometimes. And they're going to be saying,
understandably so.
But they're going to be demanding more out of these committees and more out of leaders like Comer and all that. And I understand that. But I would caution people against listening to the critics too much and allowing that to seep into your thinking. Just because everybody in the media and the Democrats are going to be yelping about the fact that they claim that there's no evidence, that shouldn't cause our people to get down and start to believe that the Republicans are not making the case, because I believe that they already are making the case. And the media can choose to ignore the evidence before them only for so long. And there, you know, there's any number of avenues for people to get their information without having to go through NBC News and the like. I think the Republicans are going to be able to methodically build this case, have it seep into the American consciousness, because in fact, it is a very simple story. It's a very simple story. Hunter Biden and others in the Biden family sold access to the old man Joe Biden to foreign businessmen, and that's how they all got rich. It's a simple story. It's very easy to understand. And I don't think there's any Democrats who have to look at this situation. They all know it's true. They all know this is all true. And
but I would add in there, they not only did that, but they changed America's policy on the international stage based on money that they got from those countries. Yeah. That too, if proven true, is I think the big nugget for a lot of people not to be angry about. So
I hear you. All right. Well, that's enough of that. We will talk about this more, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. Hogan Gidley, thank you very much for being with us as always. Sonny, and the t-shirt again, 10% for the big guy. Yes, Hogan.
Hey, you want to I have a cool t-shirt too. It says, ooh, socialism.
That's good.
Yeah, ooh, E-W, not ooh, O-O-H.
Yeah.
It's not an exclamation of surprise and wonder, like, ooh, socialism.
Yes, thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, I got it. And so, Sonny, good to have you back.
Thank you.
Good to see you, as always.
Good seeing you, Sonny.
I'm Tim Murtaugh, and this has been the Line Drive Podcast.